Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for selecting the best cast on this planet Earth, subjected to fighting game news, but not to the will of the fighting game elite. We are FGC Cast. Thank you so much for being with me here. And my co-host, Saki Sakura. How are you doing today, Saki?
Good. The only elitism that we're doing here is pressing buttons all day, every single day.
Oh, you know it, buddy. I am what they consider inside of the fighting game community a masher. And I happen to know that we have quite a bit of mashing news going on today. As a matter of fact, Saki, go ahead and let the people know, didn't we get some type of Guilty Gear like update I think we have on the roster to talk about today? We have some really cool like arc system showcase to go over. But before we go into any of that, we of course have to talk about the thing on top of everybody's mind, one of the most active communities on this side, literally of the entire equator, Marvel, honey, which is what we will be discussing first and foremost. So I made the mistake of actually making a tweet where I briefly spoke about a community that's very passionate inside the fighting game community, and that is Marvel. Now, inside of this video, I actually took a moment to say things about how I noticed that some of my Marvel friends do things like running into ongoing traffic when they hear the Marvel music, you know, going past some of like their family members, their loved ones, knocking over children, especially small children or even high schoolers and stuff to get over to where the Marvel is. And the question I have to ask to you today, Saki, is, do you think I'm correct? Do you think the Marvel community is that passionate?
I don't know. When I think about Tong and how he reacted to Marvel coming back to EVO last year, I think that's a great representative of Marvel right there. Now, I am going to age myself a little bit, Sharpie. I actually didn't get into Marvel. I found out about the Marvel crew way after y'all ended up not having more tournaments and became like Discord fighters. That's in my eyes.
That's fair.
So I do want to ask you though, as someone who has a little bit more familiarity, what is it that you mean exactly by this passion that you mentioned
question.
In your video?
Yeah, I know.
When it comes to the Marvel community.
Super great question. So inside of the Marvel community, there is a very long storied history, even before my presence inside of the fighting game community, where fighting game players would treat Marvel, for lack of a better word, like a narcotic. Literally, like they would be bothering their friends nonstop, as you can kind of see inside of this video from the original Super Best Friends, where Wooly Wools is actually bothering his friends for some Marvel sets. This is Canada. This is another country. This isn't even the United States of America. You know, this isn't Japan or anything like that. But this man, he is known for persisting and being persistent. And Marvel fans are very much like that. And I think one of the best times it was in display was actually at EVO 2016. After Chris G had just won, he was literally over here celebrating the win. And someone comes out of nowhere and challenges this man to a set. Literally, he puts up his controller and everyone's laughing and then security comes over. What's crazy about that entire moment is that right before that happens, nobody's like, oh, it's weird that this guy is up here. Like, Tony.
Wait.
Yeah.
So let me get this right.
Yeah.
Let me just get this correct.
Yeah.
Someone literally went in the Mandalay Bay.
Yes.
To go and challenge Chris G after the tournament was done.
Yes. Literally. They went straight up to the main stage, walked straight up there. And actually, right before that moment happens, one of the craziest things to me personally is the fact that you can actually see him, like, right there. You could see Tony Cannon or Tom Cannon patting him on the back, being like, okay, buddy, it's time to go. You know, like that's how FGC this moment is. But I think the funniest thing about it is, like, Justin's expression, realizing that, like, who is this guy coming up here? Like, who is this guy? You can see Angel in the background. Chris G is just, like, smiling and awkwardly, like, shaking his hand. And I think I actually looked at the YouTube video for this moment, and one of the things that came up was it said something about the guy was like, I'm not leaving until I beat you, or something like that. Like, very sinister. And Chris G was like, he wouldn't let go of my hand. It's, these moments are the passion that I think people have come to expect from the Marvel community specifically. And like you talked about, when Marvel got into EVO, literally last year, Tong cried. He cried, you know? And I I think that those were tears of happiness that you don't see unless you've had to live literally through knowing that your game is no longer supported at this event any longer, you know? And that's just, that's a beautiful thing that I think only exists inside of the Marvel community. I mentioned very briefly that I was kind of surprised that, like, the Smash community didn't have that type of hype, and a lot of people inside of, like, tweets and stuff were saying, oh, Sharpie, how can you not understand that Melee has more? I was like, Melee may have more people that know about that, that are actively playing it right now than Marvel, but the thing about Marvel players is just because they moved on with their lives doesn't make them not Marvel players. It just means they're not actively playing Marvel at this exact moment. But let someone play the theme song and activate them, bro.
I also feel when you, we talk about Smash, so Melee and Ultimate, right? Like, every time you talk to them, it's like, it's not talking about it with love.
Oh,
it's
very
like
much
talking
so.
Talking about it like,
yeah, very much
like
so.
How you would talk about a job that you have to go to every day to your 9 to 5 and you're just dreading it. It's not even the 9 to 5 that you studied passionately for. And I look at Marvel and I think that's like, that's actually a really perfect analogy right there. That's what you get to see from Marvel and its community, is that no matter what, no matter the touch of deaths, the BS that happens, no matter what, there is always just that we want to play Marvel when we hooking up, when we doing it. I mean, shout outs to Tampa Never Sleeps and Tong for always running the weekly Marvel tournaments that happen on Fridays. What I want to ask you, Sharpie, again, as someone who has just been in this scene and has seen almost every community possible, you mentioned about Melee and Smash.
Yeah.
What is a community you think that in today's time, with all the fighting games that have come out, that rival Marvel's community?
Oh, that's tough. That's so hard. I'm going to be very honest with you. I actually, because the Smash community isn't really close to that yet. Because the reality, they're getting close to it because, one, their game series and IP is done, right? They're not coming out with any more updates for this game. But to say that they're at the level of, like, you hearing the music and coming straight over because you want to play some Ultimate or because you want to play some Smash, I don't think they're at that level yet. I'm just not seeing it from their community. They get mad when you have to pay $5 for venue, you know? Like no shade, but I don't see you driving out 3 hours to go 0-2 inside of a tournament, for real, for real. I don't see that. I think the closest community that I see getting to where Marvel is to this day is the Melty Blood and Undernight community. I think the entirety of that community has been very, very loud about how much recognition they deserve, about what they expect to get from the community. And when the community has not necessarily given that to them through official means, they've created their own means, which then become officialified. Like, shout outs to Shinobi, who was hired by Evo staff to coordinate, I believe Undernight is going to be at Evo this year. He's responsible for coordinating the tournament organization aspect of that. So that's huge. I really think, I don't want to just say Melty, because it's not just Melty anymore. They now have Undernight underneath them. They're creating an entire legacy. I honestly just want to say Team French Bread, which I think both of us as indie, as people who really start, who have been following indie teams, who have been growing with indie teams, you understand why I think that, of course, a community that comes from an independent fighting game probably has the best chance of success in the long term.
Absolutely. And I do want to say that I agree with French Bread, with the French Bread notion. I definitely want to say that I would put French Bread and Guilty Gear as a whole in those two categories, just because I feel like regardless of what the current game is and where the game's dev cycle is, there is loyalty inside those games. It may be particular games, right? But I feel like at some point, you're going to go back and forth. Like, there's plenty of French Bread players that go back to Actress Current Code. There's plenty of players that, like, they were on Undernight for the longest. And you see Undernight, before Undernight 2 came out, they were playing in those tournaments. They were willing to play despite the original Undernight not having that rollback netcode. So, at least, and for me, it's definitely those. And I think One thing to also kind of like leave off on this one last note is the fact that there's not a lot of opportunity for communities to become like Marvel because of the fact that the dev cycles and these lifespans of games, you know, we're not treating like this this cycle of like, hey, you know, this is the last game that we're releasing for the game. If you look at like Street Fighter, Tekken, and Mortal Kombat, and many of these like popular fighting game series, what they're really saying is, we're going to have another game for you in about 5 years.
Yep.
Because we're going to match with the current console. Yep. And we're just looking to get more and more people to get more and more of those sales. And we're just happy that you're just playing the game and essentially filling our servers, right? Versus, I feel like that you could still say for like these French brands and like indie teams, sometimes these are their last games.
Yep.
Sometimes these series, this is all the budget allows for, right? So it's even more important that we stick together as a community and really try to push it through and keep it alive.
Very, very well put, Saki. Honestly, I think it's always refreshing to see how much knowledge exists outside of just the Skullgirls community about the realization of how important these indies are inside the fighting game community. And I'm so happy someone like yourself that came from NRS, was dealing with like Warner Brothers properties, and now is moving into like the indie field, is seeing those same parallels as well. That means that the health of the community is definitely, you know, secured. But I kind of want to talk about something I very briefly actually showcased in our very last, in the very last segment, very briefly, while you were discussing all of the nuance inside of the Guilty Gear community in terms of like how active it's becoming, especially for the anime fighting game community, I actually had a picture showcase of some really cool cosplayers, but I actually don't know what event they're from. Can you tell me a little bit more about them?
Absolutely. So if you were living under a rock and you're now just hearing this wonderful dulcet tones of this podcast, it is post-ARC World Tour Finals weekend. So basically, we had a couple of cosplayers that were invited to the World Tour. It was legit a movie, I feel like, in some ways. In addition to Guilty Gear being one of the main games, because that was part of the tour, there was actually two tournaments in addition to the finals. So you had Granblue, which was also part of part of this year's tour with Granblue Fantasy Rising, and this was actually one of the final spots, as well as the LCQ was here. And then we had also Undernight as well. And then, of course, you know, typical Guilty Gear Strive announcements happening. We got news of Abba, who we'll be talking about in just a short minute. And then, of course, we also got teasers for the next character, the last character for Guilty Gear Season Pass 3. And then also just news about where Strive is going. So, Sharpie, I mean, what are your thoughts about seeing a classic character like Abba back?
You know, I personally was really excited about it. Now, I'm going to be very candid. I've never like been a Guilty Gear exclusive player or anything. I just really love the anime side of fighting games. And one of my original like friends that I first met inside this community, he used to play Abba. Like, and he told me that after she was not, like, she was one of the best characters ever created. And because she wasn't inside of like Exert, he wasn't going to play it ever again and all these other things. And so this is like one of the very first times I'm actually getting an opportunity to see how she moves. And I think that's really just a testament to Strive. They're bringing back all of their greatest hits. Like my friend Elky Dory, I don't think he's played Strive since. I don't think he did play Exert. I don't think he did play Rev. You know, I haven't seen him play Guilty Gear in a while. He plays KOF now. And so I'm interested in seeing if players like him are all going to come back because of her. But Saki, the thing I really want to point out as like one of the best things that I think to have ever come out of this announcement was actually your reaction to the announcement. It's literally so incredibly adorable. You are so freaking cute when you got so excited for Abba there. I watched your reaction video, and I want to remind our viewers, if you're not subscribed to Saki on YouTube, make sure you go to Saki's YouTube, Saki Sakura TV on YouTube. She actually has not only streams, shorts, but she also has live reactions to the latest news aside of Guilty Gear, NRS games, or some of your favorite up-and-coming visual novels and indie games. So highly recommend subscribing to her. But Saki, outside of that plug, I gotta just be honest, she looks great. I'm excited for her.
Yo, she feels great, Sharpie. At the time of this podcast, I was actually playing on stream. And for starters, what I really want to highlight here is a couple of things, yeah. Right? So the first one is she actually doesn't really change gameplay mode, with the exception that she doesn't have to worry about blood packets compared to, I believe, Plus R, where you did have to worry about that in her gameplay. In fact, right here for Strive, she is very simple in the sense that you just need to get your jealousy meter and turn into her jealous form to be able to get access to probably one of the fastest dashes, actually beating out Chip's dash as well. And then in addition to that, like really figuring out her defense when she is not in jealous mode. So I think she's actually a great character for beginners. This also brings up a really solid point too, of that the devs have mentioned when it comes to looking at season 4, because we got confirmation of season 4 at the Arc World Tour Finals. It's that there's this goal of bringing all the characters in the past as much as possible and bringing them here into Strive. They want you to feel like this is your new excerpt in a way. And yeah, I think that is awesome, because that means we get to see Jam, we could see Dizzy, we could see all of the characters we've been patiently waiting for, and potentially not really see any more new characters, just bring the rest of the cast over. And I don't really know of a game, or a fighting game at least, that has really tried to do that. Do you, Sharpie?
I can't think of one off the top of my head, to be honest. This is really nice to see coming from Strive, mostly because their IP is so strong. One of the only IPs I could think of doing something like this would be Capcom, and it's just almost exclusively through their tag team side I could see that happening, but it would just be them. I mean, outside, well, do we want to count Smash, or are we just talking traditional fighters?
No, the thing about Smash is that it's actually like Smash is interesting because that takes other characters from other IPs, yeah. Right? This is strictly, and I actually don't count, I wouldn't count Capcom in this too much because of their tag fighters.
Because how far they go, right?
Yeah, they're going to other IPs. This is strictly from the Guilty Gear world. Like, basically, Guilty Gear said, hey, these devs are like, we had all of these characters. We built an entire world. We should be able to see all of them in Strive if they're still relevant.
The only other community that I could think that actively does this inside of the traditional fighting game community, and they do it each and every game, is KOF. And they have one of the most loyal communities I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it's not Marvel. It's not Smash. But it's definitely up there. You know?
Yep. That's a good call. That was a really good call.
KOF is, I have never in my entire life seen KOF community not excited about a game because they know all of their characters are going to be there. You know?
Yep.
Every single one. All 195.
It's crazy. What's happening in 15 right now? Plus you got, I think Garu, if I'm not mistaken.
Bro, they just be, if they start grabbing anime characters, I wouldn't be surprised. Right now, it's just coming from their IP, and I don't even know. I honestly could not name 20 characters inside of KOF. But I feel like if I saw each and every one of them, I would know all of them off my head. Like, that's what's crazy about the IP to me, is every single game you have like 3 or 4 characters that you really, really know and love. And then when they make another one, it's a completely different 3. It's wild. But yeah, that community, I think, is the only other one that has kind of rivaled this. But it's a different caliber, I would say, than Strive.
For sure. And then in addition to what was being released at the Arc World Tour Finals, there was, of course, a concert, which I thought was really awesome because we got to see not only some of the best Guilty Gear Strive music, but we also got to check out a region, well, actually a history in the making, Varix winning the Guilty Gear Strive World Tour Finals. This is huge, mostly because of the fact that Varix is from Senegal, so from the African region.
Ooh.
And
that's a lot of money. That's huge.
That is a lot of money. And I think it highlights the fact of the word world inside this tour. Usually when we talk about, and feel free to, like, you know, correct me on this one, Sharpie, but usually when we talk about especially anime games, you have in this ranking, you have Japan, NA, EU, and then maybe Latin America, and that's it.
And what's crazy is when you say Latin America, you're talking about, like, not just, and this is the thing I'm exclusively stressing because we're both based inside the continental United States, right? We're both East Coast, like, you on the Southeast and me more inside the Central East Coast, right? But, like, when we say Latin America, we're talking about Central and South America, and we're combining those two regions when the reality is they're two totally separate regions. As you know, as I know, but many of my listeners don't think about, right? Like, there are more countries inside of the combined aspect of Latin America than exist inside of Europe. Like, that's a fact that I think about so frequently. It's like the entirety of Central America covers the amount of countries that there are inside of the entirety of Europe. And then the entirety of Latin America outpaces the entirety of, like, Europe, of the countries that are inside of Europe. And it's like, but we're putting it all inside of one region, we're maybe giving them representation, but that international aspect goes so far there because so much of this money will help them go so far there. Like, we're talking about a region where these consoles are not always possible to be bought in every single family. Like, it is a, you get one console per generation type vibe, you know?
Absolutely. And another thing that you mentioned too, is again about that region, because there's been a lot of talks about how even Guilty Gear is one of these games where when you see the price get translated into the regional currency, it's actually a pretty big issue for a lot of, especially like in Latin America, where they can't afford, because the actual currency is not even worth as much as like the US dollar, right? So it becomes like an actual, like, hard time to be able to participate in things or be able to actually be a part of these communities. What I just really, really love about this is that we're actually starting to see more of, like, for example, Africa being able to be part of these tours in different ways. Like, I personally love that Bandai and now Arxis have been really consistent in showcasing that, like, we are not just focused on the core audience of Japan, NA, and EU. We're trying to touch global. Yep. And I think if we're trying to talk about how we can be more inclusive in the fighting game community, that's one way with the dev support.
Yep.
I just have one question, Sharpie.
Yes.
Why can't we see this from Capcom and NRS? And all of these other devs that are doing these tours, and they say that it's world, but it's not really
world. It's just United States and Japan, bro. Speak on it. No, because honestly, I think this is actually a very important point here, Saki, and I'm so happy that you brought it up, because too frequently do we see people inside of these regions. I specifically want to talk about Kane Blue River, who has been speaking for so long and so incredibly loudly on all of his social media ever since he started placing in Marvel. He said, hey, I'm from Argentina. Me winning a major here and winning $400 goes incredibly far back inside of my country. We need to be giving more players their opportunity. We saw what's his name from Tekken 1, Arslan Ash. And he said, hey, me winning Evo here, I lose all the time in Pakistan. I'm not even one of the best players in Pakistan. We need to make it more accessible. We need to get more talent out there. We saw people like Mena RD and Kaba come from, I believe they came from Puerto Rico, or was it Dominican Republic?
Dominican Republic,
right? Yes.
But Mona also from Puerto Rico, but again, that Puerto Rico's being the US territory, so it's a little bit different.
That's why I wanted to make sure it was the Dominican Republic, because I was like, it's not 100% the same inside of Puerto Rico, but in the Dominican Republic, him going back and winning and being able to put that money back into his locals, I think he helped fund literally building a local or something there. I may be mistaken, but
what's crazy is that you go to the Dominican Republic, you go to Pakistan, you go to these regions, I don't want to say that, like, there are like these famous celebrities, because obviously that can kind of sometimes inflate certain people's egos and things like that. But what I think is so important is that like the people of these countries admire the heck out of these players because of the fact that they give back. They know where their roots and where they came from, and they want to push more people. That's why when you see like MENA in these tournaments, like in Kumite, for example, that we were talking about in the last podcast, the Dominican Republic, they travel with him. He has his team, but he also has his people like following him to these competitions to represent and show they are out here. And you know, I really feel like we don't see that in NA, we don't see that really in EU, and we don't really see that from Japan, because there's this closed-mindedness
that we are the default, that we are we are always going to be catered to. I totally get that, and it's disappointing, to be very frank. I'll exclusively mention this just because of my work specifically when it comes to like the Skullgirls community, but I'm also seeing it inside the Multiverses community. What I'm seeing is that Skullgirls, which has a mobile game, Skullgirls Mobile, right, is actually very, very popular in Central and South America. And I'm opting not to say Latin America, not because I don't believe that it affects both Central and South America, but I want to be very, very respective specifically of South American community when I say this, because the South American community actually goes harder than any other region in the entire entire world for Skullgirls Mobile, in a way that I have not seen ever in my entire life for any other mobile game ever. And I think that people need to stop discounting the players and popularity there, not just inside of the mobile realm, but inside of every single aspect. If there are the fact that there are fighting game tournaments and there are active scenes inside of Central and South America is such a testament to how strong and how powerful those communities are, those local communities, you know? That's not a testament to how popular the game is. That's a testament to how powerful those locals' communities are, that they are able to exist at the same level as a place that takes these things for granted, that gets publisher support and automatically makes them. The fact that they can make things that are at the same quality or even possibly better inside of these countries is powerful shit. And I want to acknowledge that. But I also want to say that the Multiverses community, from my experience, has been just as strong, but not inside of the obviously console department, right? Because Multiverses is exclusively a console game, so I can't really measure mobile specifics on it. I would be excited to see if there was actually a potential other really big IP, like Guilty Gear, like Tekken, or honestly, even like the French Blood community making a mobile version of one of their IPs and seeing how well that performs specifically inside of those regions. It would be very, very lucrative for sure. But yeah, that's just my thoughts on it, to be honest. I'm happy you brought it up, though. It's something that is very frequently discounted inside of these regions where we take a lot for granted, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of segueing into just like how the community also responds to each other. I kind of wanted to actually talk about this with you, Sharpie.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're the best person to do this.
Oh, here we go.
There's a tweet going out that's been like the latest hot topic.
Yeah.
About old school, new school.
Yes.
Games, fighting games being easier. We got to have a chat about it.
Yes, Sharpie. What's going on? Yes, we do. Okay. So to be very candid with you, this is not the first time this conversation came up. I'm going to be totally honest here to both our audience and to you, Saki. I don't know the origins of the fight that we're about to talk about today. But what I do know is that eventually it got to the table of Mr. Capcom World Tour host Hollywood Rob TV himself. And that man made a video. It was a video talking specifically about his frustration and seeing the same general answer from the audience whenever one of these topics gets talked about in the fighting game community. He was tired of people saying, oh, we're talking about this again. Oh, we're doing this again. Oh, this conversation piece is happening again. Like, I'm tired of this same debate. And ultimately, inside of his video, he's like, well, you know, the reality of it is this is the way the community is. Everyone over here is always tired of these same debates, but like, what are we doing to fix it? Who are we uplifting inside of the community? You know, not in those words, but I feel like that was the general energy he was trying to have. And I wanna talk about this specific topic that was brought up that got to this point, right? Because I agree. I think that we should stop having these debates. I think that we should start trying to make progress and become as educated as possible towards these topics. And I'm sure, Saki, you agree, which is why you brought it up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it's super, super important that we start actually taking the conversation of like, what should we be doing better? And what should we like actually putting like the actions behind our words, rather than taking part and going all over again with these conversations? Because I feel like we never get anywhere, you know?
Yeah, I agree. No, it's hard. And we both know that as organizers inside the fighting game community. You as one of the co-creators, or I actually think the creator of Queen of the Hill, and like me as one of the co-creators of Combo Queens, it's hard to build things from scratch that you think can address a problem or an issue that you see inside the community, right? And the first step is to having an open and honest conversation about it. To Rob TV's point, I actually think the real reason why these debates keep happening is because, candidly, they're happening as a reactive measure instead of inside of the aspect of the community where something can be done about it, right? A lot of these debates, especially the thing about old versus new, right? That happened between players. I would assume the very first time I saw it was when Big Bird FGC was saying as a reaction, I could do this and this and this, and I could beat this and this and this. And Mena then chimed in saying something about like, look, y'all aren't in your prime. We didn't grow up in these games. These conversations are dumb. You know what I mean? Like, both times, that's between two players. So it's like, what can players do to address that? Nothing, because players' focus is on getting better inside of the games that they're playing in and expanding their skills to help them perform better inside of games. The conversation of, oh yeah, would this guy inside of from 1982 who hasn't touched the game in 20 years be better than Justin Wong now? Like, bro. Like, bro, who does that help? Why did that do anything? Ultimately, I feel like this entire conversation started because there is not enough new content inside of the community. I think ultimately the reason why this is a huge talking point here is because truthfully, nobody is creating anything brand new that's like exclusively from their brain or talking about the community in any way, shape or form that now, yeah, we're now talking about whether or not someone could beat somebody else from 30 years ago. That's what I think.
One thing I wanted to like bring back is you mentioned something super crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Completely agree with you, by the way, that there's just no new content to like supplement.
Yeah.
And like be like, hey, this is the focus. Having these candid conversations, but guess what? Not on these platforms.
Ooh, and speak on it, Saki, and talk about it. And talk about it. Because what if somebody made a video posing the question, doing an entire video essay into, hey, would Justin Wong have ever beat would Justin Wong have ever beat Sonic Fox in Mortal Kombat if you spent the last 10 years practicing this? Do an investigative interview with Justin, talk to his friends, and then go, wait, why am I giving out free content ideas? I'm sorry. You guys get what I'm saying though, right? There is definitely a market for that. That's what we're finding out here. And the reason why, like, ultimately, look at how many views Rob got on his video where all he's talking about is the reaction to the reaction to the reaction, bro. Like, make something polished from this.
Anyway. Moral of the story to like close this out. Stop reacting and start thinking, internalizing, listen, and actually figure out when is the proper place to actually have these conversations and how you have them.
Oh, for sure. Because
that's what it really matters at the end of the day.
Absolute freaking positive. And Saki, as always, I just want to thank you so much for telling us to not be reactive, but to be optimal. I appreciate that so much.
Listen, we need those combos.
These combos matter, don't they, girl? They matter.
Yes, they do.
But I want to thank you yet again, Saki, for being here with us on yet another episode of FGCast, available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and on FGCast.com, which, hey, check us out. really cool website. I've been really, really thankful for everybody's feedback regarding some of the changes. We are actively pushing out new changes as we speak for mobile, so thank you so much for your patience. Saki, any final thoughts on the state of the fighting game community today? Anybody you especially want to thank or shout out, or any new projects that you're working on that you'd like to announce?
So for starters, just want to shout out, of course, because we talked about them in the stream, Tampa Never Sleeps. They've been awesome to work with as both commentator and bracket runner. And then, of course, shout outs to Incendium as well. I've been also working with them on the behind the scenes on a couple of stuff. And as always, definitely check out my new YouTube channel, Saki Sakura TV. That is where I'm posting all the anime, all the manga content that you love to see. And of course, my regular stuff for fighting games, Saki Sakura.
Everybody, thank you so much again for coming to FGCast, and we will see you offline.